The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
Hi there, thanks for taking the time to download me, Dino, on Dino's Download. Whoa, what a week it's been this week. We've had a hard job, actually, trying to decide what to include in this week's download. Anyway, joining me now is my very own producer, the one and only Jay. How are we?
The one and only. What an intro.
Has to be.
Gotta be. I'm just looking at the list of this week's download. I don't think we're going to fit it all in, you know.
Really?
We've got, like, some of the celebs that we've spoke to this week on the programme. Unbelievable.
I can't believe...
We've had everyone.
...who we get on this show.
But there's a story behind every interview. That's what's funny.
Absolutely.
You know, there was a certain someone that we're about to put in this particular podcast. You think we can tell the story in it?
Who are you thinking of?
I'm thinking of, she was, I'm a supermodel.
Oh, Sophie. Yeah.
Sophie Anderson.
We had no idea, no idea whatsoever that she was coming on. Caught unawares, I was just putting my coat on to go home.
We were just about to go home, we were sitting in the office, and the next minute someone comes running in saying, Sophie Anderson's outside.
Yeah, but who'd done that? Had we missed the booking in the diary or something?
I don't know if she actually turned up to the wrong radio station. I think she might have turned up to the wrong station.
And we grabbed her and said, go on then, we'll have you.
But we didn't have a clue what the interview was about, but in the end it turned out good. So we're
I winged it was all right, sounded okay.
Yeah, it was good.
Liverpool Fashion Week she was talking about.
We're going to play that shortly.
With a camp mate.
Yeah, oh yeah. Who I didn't know his name. He was in some show, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, I think.
Was he?
Yeah, I think
he
was.
I think he was, you're right.
But
he's been on before.
Was.
Yeah.
So that was a bit embarrassing, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, anyway, it was a good listen. Mm. Now, Chris Eubank, of course, we collared him. He was over on the Whittle for a poetry reading, which seemed... and I said to him, didn't I? I said, that's it. People don't usually associate, boxing and poetry. The two don't seem to go that. Why not?
He's a bit strange, isn't he? Mm. See, he went a bit nuts during his interview, Chris Eubank, because I think he had about 10 people trying to interview him all at once.
Yeah.
And we tried to call in. It's a
wonder he didn't punch someone.
It is. So he's coming up on the download.
Yeah. Who else do we have on?
We've got legends. Commodores.
No, I'll tell you, that was Billy King, wasn't it?
Do you know what? That was one of the best interviews I've ever heard you do.
You very much. Well, I really enjoyed talking to him.
But it was
very
good.
Interesting.
It was good hearing about how the Commodores were formed.
Yeah,
and
but
Lionel
also
Richie
as well, did you pick up, we didn't talk about this afterwards, but did you pick up that there was a bit of friction between Lionel Richie and the Commodores, and maybe him in particular? Didn't expand on it, but it was there, wasn't it?
Well, he referred to Lionel Richie. Lionel Richie, of course, being the lead singer of the Commodores. Mm. He referred to Lionel Richie as Richie right the way throughout the interview.
He did.
So, I don't think they're best of mates, do you?
No love lost.
Not at all. So that's coming up as well on the download. And as well, I think we should start with a lady that surprised us both when she come on, didn't she?
You're thinking of Rowetta?
Rowetta.
I used to love Rowetta when she was on The X Factor. I was really gunning for her. I thought she was great because she was a character. You could tell she was a character. Anyway, we found out about... her battle with alcohol, didn't we?
Yeah,
and of course, a
really harrowing story of domestic violence, which she went through. So that's coming up too. And your mate, Degsy. Degsy O'Cora.
Derek O'Cora. Now I can look into the future.
Do you believe him?
No.
You don't believe him?
Should I?
Do you believe in it in general, or do you think he's
I don't know. I've got mixed feelings over it. I mean, I've got a mate of mine who's a bit of a medium who came to my house. He didn't know, and he put his finger on something that he couldn't possibly have known about.
Mm.
And I just went and said to him afterwards, where did you get that from? He went and just picked it up. He sensed it.
But he was on. He used to do Most Haunted, didn't he?
Yeah.
It was very over the top, wasn't it? Let's just say some of his performances, because that's what they are—performances.
I wanted to get the lowdown.
Flamboyant.
I wanted to get the lowdown on why he left Most Haunted. It was a highly successful show, sold around the world, and suddenly his association with it came to an end. He came up with some story about he wanted to include different ideas.
Yes.
I don't think that was the real story.
Did he get too big for the show, do you think? And
maybe.
He thought, let's get rid.
No, maybe. Well, the show's still there without him.
Mm, it is indeed.
Yeah.
But we'll get more on that with that interview. That's on its way. But should we start with a few little highlights from the week gone by? Because we've done some great news stories as well this week.
Oh, yeah. But covered some fantastic, harrowing stories as well. Yeah.
So should we start with that?
Let's do that.
How's it going in London?
Well, so far it's been a very good rally. Even though the London papers have got front and back coverage of the event today and the anti-privatisation campaign, so it's been a good start to the day. Well, the Copper's Hill site in Liverpool, unfortunately, is no longer fit for purpose. As part of the review of the North West mail flow, Royal Mail have decided to close the operator in the city, and move it on the outskirts of Warrington next to the M62. We believe we put fair case forward to find alternative sites in Liverpool that would have costed in, rather than transfer people up the M62. And we believe we put an excellent case forward to safeguard 600 jobs in Liverpool, not just for the people who work there now, but obviously for the future of the city.
And how have the firefighters themselves on the ground reacted to the proposals?
Well, for the staff who work this system, it suits them very well. It's never been anything we've imposed on a compulsory basis. It's always been a voluntary basis. And the duty system doesn't suit all firefighters, but for those who do work it, they're very happy with it and enjoy the chance to earn extra money from their core professionalism.
And are we eventually going to see less fire engines on the road, as it were, and less manpower?
In Merseyside, we've always tried to make sure that we're improving services across Merseyside, and there's never been a reduction in the number of appliances across the county, and there are no plans at present in the current budget round to reduce the number of appliances or fire stations.
Was Lionel Richie part of it from the very beginning?
From the very beginning, yes. I and Thomas McCleary, we met in a pool hall. Actually, not a pool hall. It was the recreation hall of the college. It happened to have a pool table in it, and that's how we started. We started talking, and that's how the group was formed.
And was Lionel always the lead singer, or did you take it in turns to do lead vocals?
No, as a matter of fact, when we first got together, Richard didn't sing at all.
Nice.
There were other guys that were singing. He wasn't a singer in the least. He played saxophone, and I played trumpet and keyboards. He played saxophone and keyboards, and Tommy played guitar, and we were actually a band. We started out without anyone singing. We just played music. We played for a lot of beer blasts for colleges and little clubs around the area. And it wasn't until maybe almost 8-9 months later that we actually started finding someone that could sing. And at that time, Richard didn't sing. So it wasn't until the group was together for almost maybe a year or two before we talked him into singing.
The Sullivan Show.
Weekday afternoons, 1 till 4.
On City Talk 105.9.
And I remember knocking Elna. She was lying next to me. Elna, wake up. I think the house is on fire. So she looked and she was screaming, get the baby, get the kids. So the first priority was get us out. And I looked around and I could see Keane, I could see Christina, I could see Elna, I could see the baby, but I couldn't see Francesca. I was hysterical. And I knew at that stage, that the fire had got it. They carried what I can only describe as a black, charred, burnt to a crisp version of my daughter. From that stage, I knew she was never going to make it, but she fought bravely for 3 weeks in Alderley Hospital in the intensive care, and died of the injuries that she'd sustained to her lungs and everything. They said it was the most massive insult to the body that they've ever seen. Anger doesn't win campaigns and battles and get justice. I'm trying to keep as calm as I can till, we get the person who's done it, because it's something we're going to have to live with for the rest of our lives.
Again, we're hearing more and more, aren't we, about more companies closing down, more people being made redundant, losing their jobs.
I know, and it's such a worry for you all, because it's not affecting you, it's affecting family members. I've got 2 members of my family who've recently been made redundant. Yes, I can help them, but, it's all the sort of the worry about the finance and how long it's going to take you to get another job, and just keeping people motivated.
Now, it's those sort of things, worrying about finance, how I'm going to get another job, that really should go onto the back burner, by which I mean they shouldn't be the most important things you should be focusing on.
OK, so what do you think they should be focusing on?
Going out and getting another job, being positive.
No one can doubt, I think, that Capital of Culture last year has been a massive success for the city, but also for the North West and for the rest of Britain.
How does it, in effect, have a knock-on effect?
Well, more people are attracted not only to Liverpool because they're reading more about all the fantastic events that Liverpool has to put on, but they're also therefore discovering that Liverpool is in the North West and that the North West is in England and England's in the UK. So they're also discovering, well, I might have been to Liverpool already, but maybe I'll book my next trip and take it to somewhere else in the country. So it's a real kind of opportunity to raise international awareness of our regional destinations, our regional cities, as well as London and the rest of Britain.
This is grim news, isn't it?
It is. It makes very grim reading indeed, particularly on manufacturing output. And in the car sector in particular is one area that we've really seen a downturn. But as you say, the news is unremittingly grim at the moment.
And this is going to be right across the board as well, isn't it?
I think it is. There will be some sectors that are going to be impacted in the next few weeks and months, but it will be right across the patch, I think.
What do we know about this bomb?
Well, very little at the moment, it seems, isn't it? Because it's a bit of a funny area for it to be found in, although it could be that with the Dingle oil jetties were the target. As everyone will know, like Bootle Docks was usually the main target. And, of course, probably everybody's seen those the pictures of devastation around the Queen Victoria Monument when they were getting the business quarter and what have you. But Sefton Park, it's a bit of a mystery one, isn't it, really?
It is, really, because it just seems to be a little bit off target.
It came from the Lord Mayor, Steve Rotherham. It's the 20th anniversary of Hillsborough, as I'm sure you're aware.
Mm.
And he wanted, he's involved in a number of projects, but he wanted us, he came to myself and Peter Hume from the farm and said, I'd like to get some sort of music commemorative CD together. So he asked us to take it up and get together some musicians and, you know, musicians who are Liverpool fans, and try and see what we could get together.
Hey, Philip, tell us some of the footballing legends that have taken part in this.
We got the footballers in for the chorus sing-along bit. So it was Kenny Dalglish, John Aldridge, Bruce Grobbelaar, Howard Gale.
And are they as good as singers as they are footballers?
No.
Do you have to tweak with the recording a little bit?
We did, yeah. Just a bit further back there, Kenny. A bit further. Oh, no. Yeah. No, it was the intention and the warmth. And we had some of the Hillsborough families there who were also singing along on the chorus.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be a number one hit.
Hope so.
The Sullivan Show. Weekday afternoons, 1 till 4. On City Talk 105.9.
Some of the highlights there, Jay, from last week's news hour.
How much stuff did we cover there? We've done tons.
It amazes me every day. I mean, you come into me nearly every day. I think every day you do it. And, you know, you come into the studio when we've finished the first hour and we've gone into the news and you go, my God, great first hour. What we got through.
Yeah, but we just both come out of that studio shattered, don't we? Yeah. Shattered. Yeah.
Well, when you're talking and listening to people who've got those harrowing stories to tell, you know, that fire, that family involved in that, that's just
the Bimpson
horrendous
story there, that was obviously featured on Crime Watch this week.
Yeah, yeah. And a good response to the
girl. You know, I was on Facebook that night, actually, and some of the status comments that people were writing after seeing that, you know, just people saying they're really upset after what they've seen, and fingers crossed, you know, that all comes off and they find the person.
Well, they've had a few calls in, 30 odd calls apparently, a couple of names thrown into the hat, so a few leads for the police to follow up, and we'll be following that story, I know,
with
great interest. Yeah, but no, you can't help but get involved in those sort of things. They, you know, they're bound to drain you emotionally.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be cold when you're talking about things like that. You know, you've got to be involved and drawn into it. Anyway, great news about that new cancer research centre.
Yeah, there's a cancer research centre, with Cancer Research UK. Coming to Liverpool, so bringing Liverpool, you know, to the forefront of cancer research, which is obviously good news.
In another area, because if you think of the Roy Castle Lung Foundation, that is a leader. You know, people from around the world come to that centre for research findings and for information and so on. So, you know, there's Liverpool again, you know, at the top of the league.
And now something to add to that again. You know, it's brilliant. But next week we have got tons and tons. If you don't think this week was busy, then wait till you listen next week.
We've loads lined up.
One of the big things we've got to tag up is Ken Pye.
Ken Pye discovered Liverpool, yeah. But, you know, this series started out, what, about 3 or 4 weeks ago? 4 weeks ago, maybe. And, you know, what the man does know about Liverpool isn't worth knowing. I know that sounds a cliche, but it's absolutely true. Fascinating story. He tells me things about Liverpool I never knew. So that's always, you know, a good listen.
But we do that every Thursday at 2:30 p.m. So if you like your local history, you want to know, I don't know, the origins of your street name or something, get in touch, ask us a question, we'll put you through to Ken. And he'll tell you the answer.
He's got all the answers.
And as well this week, we've got to flag this up too. Jeannie Wolfe, she is joining the Sullivan Show.
Well, Jeannie, of course, joined us the Friday before the Oscars live from Hollywood, was giving us the lowdown. I really, really enjoyed talking to her. And again, you know, it's a cliche, but what she doesn't know about showbiz ain't worth knowing. And she knows everyone
in
Hollywood.
She's best mates with Whitney Houston, with Dolly Parton. Yeah. She's friends with Claudia Schiffer.
The stars tell her
they do.
Their secrets. You know, and she tells us them.
But she's going to, as you say, unveil all them secrets live on The Sullivan Show, and that's every Tuesday afternoon,
regular
3:30 p.m.
Looking forward to it, yeah.
So some good stuff next week.
Yeah, yeah.
I think now we should pick out one of them interviews that you've done last week and play them. Who should we go for?
Well, let's go for Rowetta. She had the harrowing tale to tell. She was talking about her appearance in rehab. I caught a bit of it, actually. Did you see any?
I didn't see any, no, on Living TV.
Very interesting. Another one of those programmes. They all get very emotional, you know, because they're dealing with... You know, she may be a celebrity, but they're dealing with real life.
Yeah.
Her real life, her addiction, her problem with alcohol. The fact that she was getting beaten up, yeah, interesting story.
Well, she tells us now how it has changed her life for the better. So this is
really... This is the City Cafe with Dean Sullivan. City Talk 105.9.
This is the City Cafe, the Sullivan Show, taking you right through the afternoon. Lots more to come on the show. It's just coming up to 20 past. The hour of 3 o'clock now. Coming to Liverpool is the stage version of Sister Act. More of that later. But ahead of a Living TV programme tonight... called Rehab. I'm joined on the line into the cafe by the one and only Rowetta. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you.
Great, good. Now tell us about this programme tonight on Living TV, Rehab.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in that?
Well, my agent said this might, because I always say no to reality TV shows, but he said this might be one with a difference and it might be good for me because everybody knew I drank a lot of whiskey and my agent wanted me to stop. Everybody wanted me to stop. So, there was this opportunity to do that, and I said, I don't really want to do a reality TV show where they just take the mickey out of you and make you look stupid. But he said, go and speak to the producers. I did do, and they promised me it'd be done like a documentary.
So how long were you over there for?
I was there. Well, we were there 2 weeks with the cameras, which we had to do, and then you could if you wanted to stay an extra 2 weeks, and I ended up staying longer than everybody. I stayed an extra 2 weeks and 4 days after everybody else had gone.
Okay, so Rehab, you'd admitted you were drinking a bit too much whiskey, was it then, Rowetta?
Well, not a bit.
A lot?
Yeah, it was a problem. I drink a bottle at a time, and I was drinking, it was like I had a social phobia. It was like every time I had to meet somebody or go out of the house, I was drinking, and it just got really bad. I was blacking out all the time. But I've been filmed doing it. It kept getting in the papers that I was drinking. But I still didn't admit I had a bad problem. I thought it was just a binge drinker like a lot of my friends are.
So that is the first stage, though, isn't it? Admitting that you have a problem or that you rely on alcohol.
It is, definitely. And I knew I loved it, but I didn't think I needed it. But then I couldn't go without it. So I did have a problem. And the thing that this place where we went, which anybody who watches tonight will see, they don't look at it like... it's a disease or anything. They say, we've all got this pain and we're drinking because of a reason, something that's happened to us in the past. And if you can sort out that's the way you're reacting to this pain, then you don't need to reach for a drink anymore and you gain control of your life. And honest to God, it's worked for me. I haven't drunk since... Well, I did slip on New Year's Eve, to tell the truth, but since 25th of October, I've been sober, apart from a couple of drinks on New Year's Eve. And for me, that is like giving up. It's been brilliant. I've given up smoking for the last month. I feel like a different person.
Well, that's a great achievement, Rowetta. Did you find out then what it was? What was the reason for your drinking? Do you know?
Yeah, well, I knew deep down anyway. I just never had counselling for it. I was a battered wife for 5 years, and the father of my children, my ex-husband, and I never had counselling for it. So when I'm sober and I think about that,
when
I
you
cry.
Say you were a battered wife, what was going on? How did you deal with that?
Well, I had two babies. I ended up in a women's aid refuge. How did I deal with being battered?
Yeah, and was he drinking alcohol as well?
No, he was a heroin addict.
Right.
He wasn't really into drinking, but he beat me up before he started taking heroin. I don't know how I dealt with it. I just coped because I had babies, and I used to leave him all the time, but he'd find me, and I'd end up in hospital, and the police had come. I mean, really, really violent assaults all the time, but I ended up in hospital, and the police came and told me to go to a women's aid refuge, and that really saved me. I was in there for 5 months.
But also as well, Rowetta, a lot of people would say, you know, there is evidence that a lot of battered wives do go back to their husbands or their boyfriends. Why do they do that?
Because you think you can make it work, probably, or you think you don't see a life away from him. It's this brainwashing. I mean, I was completely brainwashed, and I really thought I loved him. I was only very young when I went with him as well, 16, the first proper boyfriend, and he kept saying he loves me and he wouldn't hurt me if I came back, he wouldn't hurt me if I got married to him, he wouldn't hurt me when we had a child, he wouldn't hurt me when I had a son, and it just got worse and worse and worse, and then he used to go to prison, and he'd say he'd change. No, he didn't go to prison for me, he'd go to prison for stabbing somebody or beating somebody else up, And he'd always say, you know, I'm a changed man, but he'd come out and a few weeks later he'd start again.
Sounds like you were living an horrific life there.
It was really, I mean, this is all, I left when I was 21, I am now 43 years old, and I thought, and I've always told other women, if you're getting beaten up, leave him, go into a refuge, you know, take your kids and go. But it's not as easy as that. I think we do need to have some kind of counselling. I've just been left with this. It really is a pain. Very difficult for me to have other relationships since then as well. I found it very difficult, and it's all been in drink. I've just turned to drink. I find life easier with drink. I feel like no one's going to take the mickey, no one's going to beat me up because I've got drink in me and I'm strong. And hopefully now I don't need the drink because I've really, really sorted it out. They gave us therapy from 8 in the morning till 5 at night.
What sort of therapy was it then? You were over there in America. Talking about your program Rehab, which is on Living TV tonight.
9 o'clock.
Excellent. If anyone's just tuning in, this is City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. I'm talking to X Factor star Rowetta. What sort of things were they doing with you while you were there then?
Well, every it was like we do an hour of, say, psychotherapy, and then we'd go in to do acupuncture, then we'd do physical training, then we'd do an hour of hypnotherapy, then it'd be an hour of family therapy. It was marriage therapy. It was just therapy, 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 one after the other.
And was it hard? Was it hard to come off the drink?
Yeah, but to be honest, when I had my last drink, I had the morning I was going into rehab, I thought, right, I'll try and finish this bottle of whiskey, but because I was being filmed, they wouldn't let you say, no, come on, Rowetta, so I threw a little bit away just for the cameras. I thought, all right, I'll throw it away, and I really thought, God, I should have drunk that, because halfway through the day, I did want to drink again, because you were strange people, that's my worst nightmare. As soon as I'm sobering up and I'm with a load of people I don't know, I want to drink, but they said it was, my blood pressure went, did it go down or up? I think it went right. I can't remember what it did because it was pissed. The drunk, sorry. but it went one way or the other. Excuse me for saying that. Then they put us on detox tablets, which completely wiped me out for a couple of days. Me and Les McEwen, I just remember us, we were on these detox tablets, not really with it. Just while your body gets used to not having alcohol. So it was very, very difficult, though, to do this therapy. After a few days, you just want to get off the detox tablets. You're not really thinking, I want a drink. You're just thinking, I want to feel normal. And I want to stop crying because there's a lot of crying involved. But it was really, really hard, a lot harder than I thought it'd be because I didn't expect to have all this therapy. And even aftercare that I get now, it's been brilliant.
And you had to face your demons then, did you?
Yeah, I mean, mine was facing this pain that I got because that's where the thing that passages the place it was done at. They just say if you can get rid of your pain, you can get in control of your life. And, it's just my demons. I don't even know what my demons were. It was just the fear of my husband and the memory of my ex-husband. So you just got to exercise that. And it's not that easy. It's very, very difficult. It was lots of sessions, lots of getting to trust the therapist as well, because I'm really wary of, I've always been wary of therapists and think, oh, the quacks, and they're going to rip you off. But we were in there. We didn't have to pay for the therapy. It was paid for. We're very lucky because I think it's $68,000 a month or something. So I know.
Wow.
So but they were the best people, and it was amazing. But it's like, there's no way most people would or could afford to go there and pay for it. So I think we were very, very lucky to get that treatment.
Well, Rowetta, you know, like you said, you haven't had a drink since October, apart from New Year's Eve. You're allowed to drink on New Year's
Eve. Well,
I
only had a couple. Yeah. No, well, you're not if you've got what I've got, which
is
something wrong. Yeah, because I can't control it. But I did control it on New Year's Eve, but I didn't do it again at the minute. So,
You're doing well, so pat yourself
doing
on
very
the back.
Well.
So that's great. We look forward to seeing that show
tonight.
And of course, you know, you were one of the stars of X Factor. I've got to tell you, that I was one of your biggest fans.
Thank you.
I used to love watching you on that show. I thought you did.
Yeah, probably because
really
I was drunk.
were you actually drunk when you were doing X Factor?
Well, I was in my audition. I was very drunk in the audition. And
right.
Then, you know, and I was drunk. I was drinking, but I wasn't drunk the whole time I was on X Factor. A lot of people have said today, oh, you were drunk all during X Factor. No, I was drinking because I found it very, very difficult. My husband had come out of the woodwork. Also, the public thought I was this mad woman, which is good and really funny. And I was worried that people would go, oh, she's not really that mad. She's not really that funny. We won't vote for her. We don't like her. I don't know. It's just a lonely place to be when you can't come back home to Manchester, which I wanted to do, and just be normal. You're just away from your friends and family. So, yeah, whiskey was my friend.
So how did it come about, the X Factor? How did you get involved? Did a friend put you up to it, or did you see it advertised?
No, at all. I saw an advert with Simon on, and I used to watch American Idol all the time. I love Simon.
Yeah.
And I wanted Simon to go, Rowetta, I love your voice. You've got an amazing voice. and that's all I wanted. And I just thought I'd love him to say that to me. And I thought, I bet I'd get on with him. I used to have these, not dreams about him, but I used to probably watch American Idol, fall asleep and think, I've just imagined him saying it to me and saying, you're wonderful.
And of course, he ended up doing exactly that.
And more, yeah. Well, yeah. not more rude ways, but no. Yeah, more compliments. Yeah. He said amazing things to me. And that was, I don't know why it was important. I just knew, you know, when you know you'll meet somebody and you know we'll say, I just had a feeling it would happen.
And what
which was really weird when I was in his group and everything. It was really weird.
What was the whole experience like then? Because you know,
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved working with Simon. I thought it was really good. I loved Sharon Osbourne. I loved it. I loved the singing bit, and you know, like the way the public reacted to it was fantastic. I loved the audience. I loved the pull bit, but like standing there and being told even compliments, I think it's really uncomfortable. It's embarrassing to be said when people are going, Sharon's saying, you know, oh, you've got the voice from heaven or gift of God or whatever. And it's just embarrassing when you stood there like a plonker, you know. And I was just thinking, God, all the Happy Mondays fans are going to be proper thinking, what is she doing? Because they were asking, what are you doing that? And
but
I did
of course
feel a
you, bit did, you did really, really well in the competition, didn't you?
I did. It was the last woman left. And. Yeah. I couldn't ask for more than that, really, because I thought, I didn't think I was ever going to win, but it was just really, really lovely to have all the thousands of people that entered to end up being the top woman that year. It doesn't mean I'm the best, it just meant the public took to me and the judges liked me, and I was really, really honoured, and I just thought, I think I did a lot better than I could ever have imagined, and I've never stopped working since, so I love the X Factor, nothing but good things to say about it.
I'm talking to Rowetta, one of the stars of the X Factor here on City Talk 105. Point nine. Rowetta, then it just completely turned your life around, did it? Being part of that show?
Yeah, well, I've always been busy because I've been Happy Mondays for 10 years on and off, and I've sung with a lot of bands. I've done a lot of things in my life, singing wise. But yeah, it just all at 38, you think you don't have to hang your shoes up or your microphone up, but you're not going to start a new career. But I really, really did. I started singing to different people. I've had opportunities to do amazing things singing at Children in Need, which I think there's only Leona and G4 have sung on, and maybe Leon. Mm. I didn't win it, but yeah, I got to do that. I've just been asked to do lots and lots of things, been in Footballers' Wives Extra Time, which I love doing. I've toured Japan. I've brought out my own records. It's been brilliant.
And, of course, you're coming to Liverpool. I know you're doing. I think you're doing a tour of this show. It's the stage version of Sister Act, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not. It's songs of Sister Act we're doing.
Right.
The stage version of Sister Act doesn't have the songs from the original films in.
Right.
So that's going to be at the West End. But what the tour that we're doing, we did it last year, myself and the London Community Gospel Choir, we did 8 dates last year, and people said they wanted more, and can you come to a city near us? And everybody dresses up as nuns, and we do the songs that were in the film that they're not doing in the musical.
Right.
Yeah, so because it's the popular songs that everybody loves, Oh Happy Day and Joyful, Joyful, and I Will Follow Him.
So it's a fun show to do then.
Brilliant. And especially because the audience know a lot of the songs and the audience dress up as nuns and vicars. And it's just bizarre later on, quite often. I used to, after the show, go and pop into the pub and it'd be full of nuns, but maybe I won't pop into a pub anymore.
So how do you handle that? Can you go into a pub these days and just say, sit there with an orange juice?
I know I sing in a lot of clubs, like a lot of gay clubs I do, a lot of gay venues and dance house music clubs. And all it is, I just arrive really late now and get off. As soon as I have my photos taken with a few people after the show, just go where I would have just been the last one there. And then everybody back to my hotel room. And not in my bed, as the sun said today. But, you know, back to my hotel room is what I was saying.
So it's best to avoid the temptation, best to avoid that, yeah?
Well, yeah, I don't avoid going out, but I don't stay long. And I go to my friends' parties, but I'm gone after half an hour. I take my car and get off. It's early days yet, though, do you know what I mean? I've not seen my friends from Happy Mondays, Bez and stuff. I can't see much of him. We can't go out. I've been to his house to see my godson, but we can't go out partying because I can't do that anymore at the moment. So
how long are you on the road with Sister Act for?
28 dates
wow.
It is. So that's, and it's over, we start on the 22nd of April and then we go right the way through to June. And I think we're at the Liverpool Empire on the 27th of May.
Indeed.
And we're going to be in Southport, the Southport Theatre, the following day, 28th, in case some people want to go to both.
Excellent. And are we ever going to be seeing Happy Mondays back together?
Happy Mondays, Sean, Bez and the drummer sometimes do get back together, but the rest of the band don't, and I won't. No, I had a big fallout with Sean. He punched me. I won't work with anyone who punches me.
Oh, dear. So, you know, you've had it tough, haven't you, Rowetta?
No, just unfortunately, I had dealings with two heroin addicts who smacked me. That's life, isn't it?
Well, that's tough, just, you know. Anyway.
It's life, though, as I say, life. But I've got fantastic children. I've had a great career, great time. I've got some fantastic friends. And, you know, everybody's got bad things in their lives, and it's how you handle it, isn't it? And, you know, I'm just, like everybody else, getting on as best I can. And for anybody who's listening who does drink a lot, if it's a problem, if you could try and sort it out, if it's because something's happened to you years ago, get some counselling or something. Yeah. They should make sure it's free and make sure some really good counsellors are free. I was never offered any, and I think it's scandalous, really, when I think about it.
Loetta, been lovely talking to you. Look forward to seeing you in Liverpool.
Yeah, and rehab tonight, 9 o'clock, Living TV. Liverpool, 27th of May, Empire Theatre. Tickets available now.
That's Roetta of X Factor fame.
The City Cafe. City Talk 105.9.
With two world title belts and 45 career wins, Chris Eubank was a formidable force in the boxing ring. Of course, he's retired over a decade ago, but he's on Merseyside promoting another of his great passions. He joins me on the line now into the cafe. Good afternoon, Chris.
Good afternoon, sir.
You're in Merseyside. Tell us why.
I'm here. My lawyer, Paul Dumbleton of Beach Jones, the lawyer, asked me whether I would come up and attend a school on poetry, on courage. So I've come up to actually do that because I do find it quite cathartic, speaking about the subject of poetry and courage and how it motivates me and why it's so good for youngsters and people in general.
Now, not many people would associate you, Chris, with poetry.
Well, I don't know why not. I mean, I've been speaking of it and reciting it from memory long enough. However, I suppose the media never really picked up on it too well, simply because it went against what they wanted, which was, I suppose, scandalous things. Not to say that I got involved with anything scandalous, but good news with the media, the red tops, is no news, and bad news is good news. So.
Do you think the media, though, are guilty of portraying boxers as people who are just, you know, get through life with the fists as opposed to their brains?
They try to. However, you know, I have a firm belief that I'm going to break that mould. Sooner or later, I'll get it through to them that no, we are warriors, and the objective of a warrior is to ensure peace. It's not to fight, it's to make peace. Strong people make peace, weak people fight and hit people.
And
it's easy to hit people, it's hard to reason.
And
that's what a proper fighter or warrior does, he reasons.
Do you still regard yourself as a warrior then?
An old one, but indeed, yes, sir, indeed I am. Because every day one's tasked. Every day you can take the high road, because situations or fights don't just happen in the ring. They happen mentally amongst people and people you meet in the street. And it's about helping. And it's about being considerate. And if you're being considerate, then you're fighting, and you're fighting the right fight. When you're being inconsiderate, then you're bullying, you're pushing people around. You are, not physically, it doesn't have to be physical. When you're inconsiderate, you're not taking into consideration the feelings of others, and that is unkind. So the viewpoint I'm actually getting across to you is the fact that to be strong is to be considerate. It's really tough to be considerate. If you can do it, not only is it good for you, but it's good for the community at large.
I'm talking to Chris Eubank, if you're just joining us, on Merseyside to promote and take part in a poetry evening this evening. Over on the Wirral, is that, Chris?
I beg your pardon?
Is that on the Wirral where you'll be tonight for the poetry evening?
Indeed, yes. Kingsmead School.
And what sort of fights are you engaged with these days, then?
It's the good fight. It's to police the community. It's to, you know, tell people to stop being rude. Asking youngsters to watch their language. Refer to their elders as Mr. rather than mate. Practicing good conduct.
So you're talking about manners?
Indeed, sir.
How is this compatible with your career in the boxing ring?
Well, when have you ever known me to be, well, apart from the Dan Sherry fight, which was my first defense, when have you ever known me to be in any way negative? You know, to be charming is good. It's right. To be kind, to have good manners, this is what I've always championed, and I've always tried to carry myself in this way, and I think it's why I have respect. It's not only my boxing victories, it's the way you carry yourself, because no matter how good you are at what you do, if you don't carry yourself correctly as a man or as a person, then people don't like you, you know? And that's just a common sense point of view, isn't it?
I'm sure it is, yes. Chris, I'm just wondering, how was that charm demonstrated when you were actually in the boxing ring then?
In the boxing ring?
I mean, a lot of people seeing you, you know, punching someone's head.
Hold on. In the boxing ring, the objective is to score points by striking your opponent. There wasn't ever any anger, malice, hate or dislike involved. It was about scoring points. Now,
Does it not make you a better boxer to use some sort of aggression when you're in the ring, though?
Well, the aggression must be controlled. It must be unleashed. It must be paced. For the people who just unleash a whole lot of anger, they blow themselves out within minutes and get stopped. The idea is to pace yourself and control yourself. Control your emotions. If you get emotional, if you start getting personal, then you're going to end up losing. The idea is to keep it objective, score points. When I get hit, the man didn't hit me because he didn't like me. He hit me because that is the game. And that's why that's a really good thing about boxing. You have to learn to appreciate a man hitting you with a good shot. You have to say in your mind, very good shot. Because if you say, right, you've hurt me, I'm going to lose my cool and I'm going to hurt you back, that's when you lose. That's why it's such a good game and process for youngsters. It keeps them objective. Them objective, and it makes them responsible.
You're listening to City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. My special guest in the cafe, Chris Eubank.
Can I just make one more point?
Yeah, please do.
I started boxing at 16 years old. I'm now 42. I haven't had an illegal fight since I was 16. Before I was 16, I was fighting on the street maybe 3-4 days a week from the time I was 8. Now,
why was that? How did that come about? Was that just the way you were living your life?
No, that's just the way it was in South East London, Dalston, Hackney.
That's what I mean by living your life. You lived your life by fighting on the streets.
Well, if you don't know, you just don't know. But when you go into a gym, you start being taught. You never use it outside the gym, which is why, again, it's good for kids. And you're taught principles along with that. And those principles are to protect the weak, you know, to highlight the plight of people in less fortunate positions than yourself. To be considerate. This is why boxing is a wonderful sport. Yes, people do get hurt. Yes, I understand that. But people are all the time in many sports. I've got to pass you now on to my agent. Her name is Leisha. She's now dragging me away. She's using force, I may add.
Really?
Brute force, yes. It's in the eyes. It was very good talking to you, sir.
Okay, enjoy your time in Liverpool, on Merseyside.
Well, see whether you can get yourself over here tonight and have a listen.
Okay, great.
It makes perfect sense. It's all common sense. I'll pass you on. Bye.
Chris Eubank, thank you for joining us. I wanted to ask him about being a dandy and wearing a monocle, and if he's still terrorising the people on the streets of Brighton in his big American truck, but there you go, didn't get a chance to. That's Chris Eubank. He's doing a poetry evening over on the Whittle this evening.
The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
Launched in style last night at Chiar in Liverpool City Centre, Liverpool's Fashion Week. Joining me now, I think they're both suffering a little bit worse for wear, Sophie Anderton and Julian Bennett. How did it go?
Hi. Oh, it was fantastic. Everyone looked amazing. It was a really, really good launch night for London for a Fashion Week. I've just done London Fashion Week.
Right.
And I have to say, Liverpool did it in style.
Well, you know, that's what we we do best, really, you know, style, dressing up and partying. So, yeah, I'm glad it went well. Liverpool Fashion Week, it's a regular feature now, isn't it, Julian?
Yeah, well, this is the second year. I think last year went really, really well. And I think a lot of people realised that, you know, we could do something even better this year. So we got a lot more sponsors involved. And a lot more great designers. I'm actually bringing up some British London designers up for the Tuesday night, the 10th of March. Sophie was obviously kind of doing some modelling for us as well because she does it oh so well.
I have an amazing Indian designer called Javin Vaya, who is a very good friend of mine. He will be doing London Fashion Week actually next season. So this is a great way of him actually getting his foot in the door into the British designer community. So I'm very excited to be bringing him up. And I'm also going to be doing Rosa Couture.
You've got Rosa Couture, who's
a Russian designer.
Amazing Russian designer who's just brought her first collection over here now. I've also got Samantha Cole coming up, who has the most beautiful clothes. Very Victorian edged with the 21st
century. Yeah, and Caprice is showing as well, isn't she?
Caprice is doing her lingerie up
here. Oh, does she design? Of course she does lingerie.
Yeah, lingerie, yes. Darling, we should get you down there.
Very good. So it's great to get out to London then, isn't it?
I love Liverpool.
No, I have to say, I've had a fantastic time. I'm looking forward to coming back up on the 10th.
Okay, yeah. So what sort of things are going to be happening in the actual Fashion Week itself,
Well,
Julian?
We've got shows Monday to Friday. We've got 6 collections every evening. This time round, we've taken away from the clubs and the bars and we're doing them in hotels and galleries. Make it more of a fashion thing as such. And I've got some great designers. And on the final night, on the Friday night, is a charity fashion show. We've got about 26 celebrities of ages from 6 to 50 who will be wearing designer clothes from the week.
The celebrities who are 6 years of age?
Yes, darling.
Oh, really?
Me! My dog, Lulu. But they've got a great broad aspect of ages of celebrities who will be modelling on the Friday night. And 50% of the takings on the door will go to a children's charity. I'm not too sure. That's terrible of me not to know. But I will find out.
Or going
you know.
To a good cause. That's the main
that's
thing.
All that
so, what basically happens at these fashion shows then? Is it just a case of, you know, the likes of yourself, Sophie, parading up and down in beautiful gowns?
It's not that easy, thank you very much. There's rehearsals, there's fittings, a lot of waiting around, obviously hair and makeup and stuff. But at the end of the day, I mean, I'm coming up, I'm opening and closing the show. So it is quite a bit of a pressure when you're doing that. And I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, it's going to be, I think it's more of a pressure. Obviously, there's going to be younger models. They get a lot more nervous than we do. I'm kind of a veteran after 15 years. So for me, it's just really good fun.
And you still look as fresh as the day you started, darling.
Not that fresh this morning.
And how did you get into the business then in the first place?
I won 4 modelling competitions, 2 national, 2 regional when I was 15. And I moved up to be a Models 1. And then I was very lucky. I mean, I was working straight away. I never did the starving model thing. I was very, very lucky, very blessed. Did Paris, Milan, New York, everything. And then when I was 19, I was plucked out of obscurity by Her Brits and did the Gossard Wonder Bra
campaign. Now, tell us a little bit about that, because I was just reading a quotation. Her Brits had a strapline, didn't he? Who said a woman couldn't get pleasure from something soft?
Yeah, it was in the era of Spice Girls and the sort of girl power and everything. And, you know, after the Hello Boys was such a success and I took over from Ava, they wanted to come up with something which wasn't so in your face, but a little bit more sort of subtle. It wasn't that subtle, though. I mean, there were so many complaints. Billboards were getting pulled down all over Europe. And they had to basically airbrush out my nipples and put them back up again. So,
and what was the reaction from the man on the street?
Apparently there were a lot of car crashes, from what I was told.
I heard that as well.
Yeah, there was obviously Hello Boys, and then there was that. And then since that campaign, it wasn't until Sophie Dahl did Opium there was ever such a hoo-ha.
Yeah.
But especially, I mean, Ireland were up in arms big time. I mean, all the Catholic countries were just like, who is this girl? Da, da. And I was actually getting really quite in the neck.
And how old were you then?
I was 19.
A lot of pressure then.
Yeah, it was. But I did that for 3 years. And then obviously I've been very lucky ever since. And I've kind of, now I'm diversifying more into, I'm doing acting. I've got a couple of movies next year. I'm shooting one in America, one here. Some TV presenting coming up. And I'm also doing my own lingerie and swimwear company as well.
Very, very, very busy. Girl, yes. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. We're talking about Liverpool Fashion Week with my special guests in the studio, Sophie Anderson and Julian Bennett. Now, Sophie, you were involved in quite a number of reality TV shows as well, weren't you?
I was. My favourite, I would say, was Celebrity Get Me Out of Here. My least favourite, Love Island.
Really? Why? Why was that?
My mother said put me in with a bunch of nitwits and I turn into one, and I pretty much did. Yes. I'm not very good. The whole hanging out with celebrity thing. I mean, my friends are very down to earth, hardworking career women, and I just find it very hard. I struggled in there.
So being on the Love Island, are you literally being watched 24 hours a day?
Yeah,
is it like Big Brother?
It was actually I thought it was going to be like the first year, which was just lying around a nice luxury pad on an island, lovely. No, it turned into Big Brother in Fiji, and I swore I'd never do Big Brother for a very good reason. I wear my heart on my sleeve. And it was great for the production company. It wasn't so great for me, but it did win over a hell of a lot of women because they realised I was just as insecure and as neurotic as the next woman. You know, I've got just as many insecurities. I mean, I worry about what my bum looks like, this, that and the other, weight. I mean, every woman's like that. I'm also incredibly emotional. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I got a bit in the neck for it, but I was just like, so what? It's an experience. It's a job. I was getting paid to be out there.
Absolutely.
You know? In Fiji.
Now, you do, you know, you're living your life in the public spotlight a lot of the time. How do you react to what is going on with Jade Goody at the moment?
Funny enough, my PR represents her. It's absolutely tragic. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to know that you're going to leave this world and you're leaving two little boys. And I mean, so her family and the people closest to her, I mean, it must be devastating. But I do think she's incredibly brave and she's bringing such awareness to cancer, cervical cancer. And maybe now, you know, the government will start lowering the ages for the smear test and everything. And women will actually, and they'll lower it down to be honest, it should be down to 14, 15. It shouldn't be that late because maybe they can catch it in early stages if we actually lower the age limits. So I do think that she actually is changing the way the NHS looks at cervical cancer and maybe bring in a few early preventions instead of leaving it so late. 23 is too late.
Absolutely. Getting back to Liverpool Fashion Week, Julian, how much work goes into organising an event such as that?
Darling, wake me up before you go, girl. No, a lot. I mean, you know, you've got to look at the fact that, you know, finding venues, you're also scouting for the models. You know, we're talking months in advance for this because everything needs to be booked up and everything within the week. Once you've got the models, it's finding the designers, who's going to showcase. And
are the designers lining up to take part, or do you have to cajole them?
No, not at all. No, because last year.
You have to pick the right ones as well. I mean, there's a lot of really shoddy designers out there. I mean, but if you can sift through the crap.
What makes a good designer then?
I think it's the innovative designs. It's taking a bit of a risk, taking pride in the work, not just. And there's a lot of designers just churn out these designs and they think, you know, just because they built a name and stuff, that the designs are going to be great. The quality usually is absolutely terrible. Personally, for me, I mean, it's like this is my Indian friend, Javin. His quality of his work is phenomenal. And I think...
Is he going to be big? Is he going to be one of the big designers of tomorrow?
I believe he will be. I believe he will especially be very, very big within the Asian community, especially Indians, especially living in the Western world, because his designs are absolutely stunning, but it's nothing slutty about them at all. It's either you show it back and it's covered at the front.
There's a lot of influence still from India. You know, it's the just taking it to phenomenal. The next level. Absolutely.
But it's the intricacy that goes into the work. And I always look at the love and the passion that's gone into a design.
What's it like being on the catwalk as a model? You know, you're strutting your stuff down there. Is it like being on the stage, you know, from an actor, actress's point of view? You know, everybody's watching you and, you know, you're getting all that attention.
Kind of. I mean, I have to actually say, I mean,
Do you become someone else when you're on the catwalk?
No, I go into my professional mode, which is cut off, and I'm so used to it. I mean, I've done it since I was 15. I mean, it's got better nowadays. So through my 20s, I used to throw up before I went on the catwalk because I was so nervous. Really? Nowadays, I can actually refrain from doing that. So that's fantastic. So it won't have to be a bucket by the
end. Big mac and fries on the catwalk, please.
No, I mean, but that was utter terror because I think that's with age, you become much more, you have much more confidence within yourself. I mean, I really enjoy it. I love the adrenaline buzz. You know, I love it as much as I love being in front of the camera or as much as I love doing TV presenting. For me, it's all work. And I'm just very, very lucky I'm still working at the age of 31.
Excellent. Well, after all that hard partying last night, I think you both need a little bit of a lie down to prepare for Fashion Week coming up in Liverpool. Just reminders of the dates in Liverpool Fashion Week.
They're from the 9th to the 13th of March. We're going to have great events every evening and great parties.
Lots of nice goodie bags. Everyone, please come. It's going to be so much fun.
If people want to find out more information, how can they go about doing that?
Good question. If you go on to Liverpool Fashion website, you'll find it there. And you'll find out where all the venues are and which designers are coming in and also some surprises in store, I've heard, but I'm not allowed to talk about.
Well, we
heard it here first.
It would be great for everyone's support, so please come.
Julian and Sophie, pleasure talking to you both.
Thank you very much, darling. Indeed. Thank you.
Mwah. The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.